We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Richard Johnson, Alex Kirshner, Steve Godfrey joining you, Split Zone Duo. Quick programming note before we get going today. Hurry Up next week will be on Monday. On Monday next week, not the usual Sunday. Hurry Up, got some scheduling conflicts on our end that we are working through. You will recall, though, on the last Sunday Hurry Up, in which Alex Kirshner and I did a rollicking frolic through the college football schedule, there were some NFL updates interspersed. Godfrey, I'm just curious, how long did the Toy Story broadcast stay on in the Godfrey home en route to the 23-7 Jacksonville Jaguars victory in London over the Atlanta Falcons?
There's nothing that can be said that will bother or like get me, right? What I keep telling people about 28-3 is I've already died. I cannot feel pain. And that is the truth. What scares me is my six-year-old was like storming around the house, pissed off.
Uh-huh.
And so
you got him.
And I'm like, oh no. Like we gotta turn sharply in the other direction, because the last thing, look, it's the worst thing in my life I can't fix by far. By far. And like, you guys are too young to understand this, but like when you hit a certain age, you realize like you can accept things, you can build upon things, you can improve things, and you can move on. This is the worst thing in my life that I keep in my life. And so with that in mind, as a lot of people's fandoms are, you're probably listening or watching to this thinking like, yeah, absolutely. Actually, yeah. So like, because of that, I'm questioning passing it on to him at all, like just making a sharp turn. But he has like multiple jerseys, like he's super into it. Maybe we'll just be Braves fans. I don't know.
Is it? But did
you? I won't be. I'll die like this.
No, but I am genuinely curious. How long did we stick with the Toy Story broadcast? Do we switch broadcasts?
I mean, he was on in the living room, but he stomped off around. It was before the Duke Kaboom halftime. And also, shout out, like, man, I'm the last person to cape for ESPN, as you can read this week in the Washington Post. But they were those. I can't remember the play-by-play guy, but it was him and Booger. And like, they gutted through major technical difficulties. And if this ever happens with a college game, it will be like our corner of the world will absolutely lose their minds if they try to do this for the college game without fixing the problems that they had.
It's funny because I like spoke to some people who worked on this, and they were like, this was like a top line thing from like the league office with a capital L O, like Big Roger, like this was important, and there were still mess up. Look, it happens. Okay. So what also happens is, as we look into an SEC that I'm not going to do that. Is the SEC wide open thing? Da 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 da. Because it's October 4th.
It's bad this year.
And it might not be when we get to the end, which is the great irony of it. But we do have an SEC that seems interesting, at least for now, in various ways. We do have a nice kind of shape up week in the SEC where I think we get to learn a lot, hopefully, about a couple of these teams. Georgia plays Kentucky, Missouri plays LSU, A&M plays Alabama. So we've got some kind of big hitter games in the league this week that we get to find out a little bit about these teams. So I don't know if you want to call these tiers, but I do want to have some discussions about these teams, and I'm glad we're going to. Let's start with who we're always going to start with. Godfrey, did you watch the Auburn-Georgia game last Saturday?
Yeah, I watched the second half, and I talked a little bit about this on the last single wing I did on Patreon. So patreon.com/SCD, you can go to splitsonduo.com for more. I get the alarm. Like I'm going to couch everything. I'm wary to talk about Georgia as a complete product right now, but I will talk about Georgia in the context of this weekend's game against Kentucky. I don't know if I'm outsmarting myself. I don't know if I'm just trying to be counterintuitive for the sake of it. I don't think Georgia's going to struggle against the run the way they did against Auburn, against Kentucky. And I know Kentucky is a running team. We talked about this in our pre-show meeting. They didn't really need to throw the ball to absolutely humble Florida, but those are Florida problems, right? Mm-hmm. I think that the way that Auburn runs, it's very horizontal at times. There's a lot of misdirection. It's a lot of like cheap bullshit, as defensive coaches call it.
It's the quarterback run game too, which equates the numbers. Yeah. And Devin Leary's not going to be out here running QB power.
No, absolutely. All that Rams nonsense is probably not going to translate. I'm not trying to short sell Kentucky at all, but I am not in the camp of existential crisis on the two-time defending national champs at all. And I said this on my other show. 10-point win against Kentucky last year, 16-6. Ugly as hell. And that wasn't early season. That was like November. That was gearing up towards winning another national title. Then they also kind of had one of those like brain fart games against Missouri. Mm-hmm. And not this year's good Missouri, like a bad Missouri team last year. So Georgia is good for this. This is what Georgia does. And honestly, they were effective enough in the fourth quarter to turn this into like a data point we learn from. We go back and go, oh yeah, right, that Auburn game, instead of like, oh God, we've got to adjust. And there's, you know, Kirby doesn't get to have the Saban advantage of coming off of a loss, but he doesn't want one either, because that resume with an Auburn loss would have been interesting come playoff seeding time.
I think this is the clearest example, Alex, of this is not the, like, when you say two-time defending national champion, you are ascribing something that I think, you know how every team does the like, oh, every year's a new year kind of thing. And, you know, do that with this team. They have a different quarterback. Your favorite player on the defense is not there, most likely, of your favorite player.
I mean, you could have been a Tyke Smith head all this time.
That is very true.
How many guys have been on all three of these defenses?
Deep cuts.
Can't be more than one or two. Look, yeah, I think that they are clearly not a finished product. And if the way that the AP poll actually worked was that teams were assessed solely on the current season, of course, Michigan would be ranked number one and Georgia would probably be two or three or four, or even five. But at the same time, I don't really care. It's fine. Like even offensively. And I understand for very good reason that like Mike Bobo has not been the most popular man in Athens, Georgia over the last couple of weeks, but the offense is fine.
Again,
they haven't figured out big plays. You know, the explosives, both running and passing, haven't really been there, but they've stayed on schedule fine. I think Carson Beck looks more fine than Stetson Bennett did in his opening couple of salvos as the quarterback for this program.
I get what you're saying.
By the end.
All right.
Not by the end. Yeah, I'm not saying by the end. Like, it just seems fine. It seems completely fine. The chances that this team loses enough games to not be there in the four are still so remote.
Well, about that, I don't know that this team can take a loss and still make it.
Yeah, that was what I was getting at earlier. This team really needed that Oklahoma game. They really, really needed that Oklahoma game to not get canceled. One, so we could all better adjust what this Georgia team is. And then two, for what Richard's implying, which is like, this is a really bad resume if you are anything other than undefeated.
Or if you're not murdering it.
Disagree.
This is the thing, though. I think you're forgetting that there's also a very crowded field of teams that look like, you know, and I don't think we want to do a full on playoff thing, but it matters because it's Georgia here. Like,
yeah,
I don't know that you can count on waltzing in backwards here with one loss like they did in 21. What the year they lost Alabama in the championship?
Do the two of you honestly believe that if Georgia comes out of SEC championship weekend with one loss, whether they've won the conference or not, do you honestly believe there's a chance that they wouldn't play?
That's a big weather. I think that's a big weather. I'm
just saying, like, it strikes me as like pretty fanciful. I mean, a one loss SEC team makes the playoff.
So where you're going is, yeah, no, I don't agree, because like, so let's play your line out for a second and say that they lose to Kentucky this weekend and Kentucky upsets them, but it's something to the tune of like a single digit upset. Okay. Georgia goes on to win the East. They beat someone in the SEC championship, right? Alabama. And
yes, they're obviously making the playoff.
I don't know that that's that obvious.
No.
Timeout. I just feel like you guys have both kind of lost it here. You're telling me that a one-loss SEC champion Georgia, that there's a
world... We're dumbasses from the South, Alex. We know what we're talking about. Like, I mean, if the two SEC grads sitting here saying this.
If you are suggesting that there's a world where a one-loss SEC champion Georgia or a one-loss SEC champion anyone doesn't make the playoff, you are both...
If it's a one-loss Georgia...
I'm worried about you. I'm concerned
it's
about
it. If it's a one-loss Georgia SEC champion, then yes, it is possible. I'm not saying
you're just wrong.
It is possible.
We're also taking into account the landscape that includes a potentially undefeated Florida State, a Texas, which we will get to, a
Texas,
USC.
Florida State.
Jesus. Maybe not USC. Sorry.
No.
An Oregon.
No. Washington. Washington, Oregon, Michigan, Texas.
Yeah.
I mean,
Ohio State,
y'all,
Penn
this
State.
Is,
yeah.
This is not hard anymore. This is not something where it becomes fanciful, as you said. Like, this is actually pretty easy to do.
And I want to be clear I want to be clear.
Yeah, go ahead.
None of this is me predicting that Georgia will lose or that Georgia will not figure it out. That's not what I'm doing. What I am doing is gaming out the situation of if they do take a loss here. I agree with Godfrey on that because of what the landscape seems like. I just don't think you can count on them coming in backwards at number four. On that with a bullet.
The 2007 thing. Everyone is trying to do a 2007 thing this year. They're like, God, things are so. It's not. It's not that at all. I've already talked about this on two shows about how, like, by this point we should have seen way, way more tumult at the top. And it's actually the opposite. And so the thing that feels weird in your head that you can't put a finger on, especially if you're from the South. It's that right now it's shaping up that the SEC will not operate with the benefit of the doubt.
Yes, that's
the
point.
There are too many really, really good teams in other conferences to the point where, look, something's going, like, Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan will solve themselves by virtue of the structure of how that conference determines a champion. But there are going to be damn good claims in that process, especially if Notre Dame keeps winning, for two of those teams. Guys, let me blow your mind, Alex, for a second, with a Georgia that loses Kentucky, and then you tell me their best win is question mark. Texas is rolling. Oregon and Washington are close to making the same case of, like,
if, and USC,
if
yeah,
one,
sure.
One's going to beat the other.
Okay,
right?
Steven, here's my point.
I don't do the hurry up, but Richard's assessment on the hurry up is officially my party line. USC, can we just go ahead and slot them into, like, the Holiday Bowl now? Like, I'm not going to do the thing where we talk about USC legitimately from here on out.
Figure the defense out, I'm listening. But
how are they going to do that?
If that defense shows up like it did on Saturday, similarly to what I said on the hurry up,
taking
it seriously without improvement.
Yeah, dude, they haven't even played the two best teams in their conference yet. That team's got three losses this year.
Let's see. I am pretty confident that if it works out that Georgia is a one-loss SEC champion, that they are going to be in the playoff. But let's see where we don't want to spend an entire episode doing.
I want to transition to a better. How about this? I want to transition for the sake of this segment because I really do want to sit with this, like, loss of comfort for SEC fans, and I want to transition to a better hypothetical, a one-loss Alabama, because, boys, as much as I love Citrus Bowl defense good, and who doesn't want to spend January in Orlando, because Citrus Bowl defense good, I hate, like, no one wants new narrative more than me, but I hate to break it to you that the way things feel right now as we enter October is that, remember, I got in here and I, like, got real close to the camera and I made a bunch of jokes about the USF game being, like, a secret subterfuge, and that they ran, like, the dummy backup quarterback out there. They gave Milroe, like, the week off. And then, boys, then what happened? He ran through the Mississippi schools like shit through a tin horn, as our friend in Tuscaloosa is fond of saying. I'm just pointing out that nobody wants to see this movie again. But we are transitioning into the second act of Alabama wakes up, figures out a quarterback situation, and then stomps a mud hole in everybody.
Yeah,
down the
I still think they're going to lose again. But yeah,
I do.
To whom?
True. Because my problem.
I think
with,
they might lose to Georgia.
I mean, they could lose to A&M. My problem with it is,
I don't know.
I think this Alabama team is a little or a lot too game script dependent with Jalen Milroe as its quarterback. If they can do what they did on Saturday, or they can do what they did against Ole Miss, which is just that defense, because defense good. Defense very defense good.
Citrus Bowl.
If that defense is just going to continue to give that offense chances to figure it out, I do think eventually, yeah, they'll figure it out over the course of the game. But you are going to look, they probably should have lost to A&M last year. Like, it's not like A&M, it's not like it blew them out. Like, A&M had one play to win the game on the goal line.
Look, this game this weekend with A&M is pretty toss-up-y.
Yes,
and
I agree.
And I think they got a few. I mean, granted, I thought they were going to lose to Ole Miss, and that very much didn't happen. But there's that, and then there's at least three or four down the stretch where, you know, it's not hard to see it. And, you know, math says that if there's a bunch of games you have a 70% chance to win, at some point you're going to lose one of them. And right. I'm talking about Tennessee. I'm talking about LSU.
They play Kentucky. Nah.
Might even be talking about Auburn.
But I will say
it's a Rhode Iron Bowl year.
No.
The blueprint here, though, is very, very clear, which is you've got Jalen Milroe. Buddy, you don't have to throw.
Can we go back? Hang on. I want to help you here. Can we go back to game script dependency? Because I think what people are hearing is that they are somehow lesser than after you get out of the first 15 or the first, you know,
two. When I talk game script dependency, I more mean what happens if they ever have to chase a game. Nothing in these last 2 weeks has been
chasing
a game. They had.
Yeah. So you mean on script in the sense that they're not trying to adjust play calls because they're down by 7+.
Yeah, maybe game flow is the better term, or the term that I should have used. But yes, the flow of the game does not force you to throw the ball in a sense where everybody or 100,000 people know that you've got to throw the ball, which means 11 people on that defense know you have to throw the ball. You can run Jalen Milroe. I think what you saw in the Mississippi State game was a Jalen Milroe who was very quick to pull the ball down and go. I mean, and whether they're going to put some more QB draws in there, whatever, in a funny way, we sort of talked about this Alabama team during the offseason as getting a little bit closer back towards the 3 yards and cloud of dust reality.
Yes.
And the funny thing is, like, they may do that, but in a little bit of a different way, because I think the running back is actually really good, but you've got a quarterback here that can really, really go. And so if your run game is this like hybrid with a lot more QB run than I think maybe we all expected, then you're still running the hell out of the ball and still playing great defense.
What did we say after Texas? We all said it. We said it across multiple programs on this network.
Citrus Bowl.
Nobody loves a loss better than Nick Saban. The adjustment that they've had on offense comes directly from that game, and I think they'll ultimately be better for it.
I would, point of order, I think it comes directly from the game after when they tried
the
backup quarterback in the rain at USF.
Dude, I am not joking when I'm telling you that they looked at the schedule, looked at USF, knew they were going into a high-scoring game against Ole Miss, and did what I jokingly said was a conspiracy there. I don't think it's a joke anymore. I really don't.
We'll see.
But that A&M game,
given Milroe's improvement since.
But Alex's point is very well taken. Like, this A&M team, with what A&M is doing up front, it's going to be serious business on Saturday.
Let's talk about A&M. So this is what we kind of sketched out the segment as, was like, what the fuck is going on with insert SEC team? There are two teams, Alabama and Georgia, that I think we can all agree are somewhere between very good and great. And
the best in the conference, you know,
be the best teams in this league, like they usually are.
Yeah. Yes.
There's correct. A whole handful here of teams that you could see doing some serious business this year, but, you know, could also be 8-4, and neither of those would be surprising. A&M is one of those teams. They played a really comprehensive game against Arkansas on Saturday, and I think, still have, other than Bama and Georgia, the best roster in this conference. And, you know, that's what years of good recruiting buys you.
Yeah.
And
I guess my response to that is, what, that's not new.
No, it's not new, but I understand it's not new, but gravity still works a certain way. And
at
some point, like, it should pay some kind of dividend. Nobody likes to make fun of Jimbo Fisher for his, you know, more charlatan tendencies than I do. I mean, I probably do it too much on the show. It probably gets annoying, but like, it's possible,
or the fact that they have hired a lineup of UNICEF ambassadors.
Yes, he did do that. And I would still love to watch a hidden camera show going on in that facility this year. But like, I don't know, Richard, I think that if you look at the things that A&M does well, you can find enough reasons to be pretty optimistic that this is going to be a pretty good team. Specifically, and like, again, I have to disclaim, he shouldn't be in college football. He shouldn't be allowed to work with college students. Fuck DJ Durkin, absolutely. But like, it's a pretty good defense that's going to keep them in like just about every game they play if they avoid like a complete meltdown out of nowhere like they underwent against Miami. Even in this Alabama game, it's not like Alabama is geared to score 50 on these guys. Like, they're gonna be in the game.
I literally was gonna ask, like, do you think either of these teams score 30 points?
No.
Do you think either of these teams score 27 points?
No.
Maybe.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, you're getting into
the winning team does.
You're getting into a thing where I think this game has, you know, you want to talk about a rock fight with Georgia and Kentucky. This game has an opportunity to be a defense asserts itself. Look, you're looking at an SEC where the narrative can very easily be all these defenses are really good when it's actually the quarterbacks kind of stink. But in this game, you really have that. In this game, you've got Max Johnson on one end, who's your backup. I'm pretty sure. I don't think Connor Wegman's going to be back for this week.
He's out for the year. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Out for the year. Excuse me. Yep. So you've got that, but A&M up front on defense has asserted. So they have 30 tackles for loss in the last 2 weeks. Now I know everybody saw the Miami game. I think Miami's pretty good. We'll get to that.
I think Miami's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. Miami's doing an ACC thing at a later date. But for now, you've got this game, looking at this game, the word toss up, Alex, that you used is where I'm at with it. I think the spread's like 2.5. Like, I don't.
It's going to be a close. It should be a really close game. And as was last year's, and then the year before, A&M won that game. Also, Richard, the thing that I'm really interested with this team is offensively, like, you know, Max Johnson is what he is. He's been playing college football for a very long time. I don't think anyone has to pretend. But like, is it possible that going back to having to play a backup quarterback might, this is a little bit of like Godfrey theory, a little bit of like philosophizing about, like, you know, kind of the way a coaching staff approaches a program. Does having a backup quarterback like Max Johnson, who you know is really limited, does that shove Jimbo and Bobby Petrino into doing the more QB friendly game planning that everyone has been clamoring for him to do for years? Like, that's a reasonable question. And by the way, I don't think that they have been, it's not like they have transitioned and become like an RPO team that makes life way easier on its quarterback. But I did think in the Arkansas game, there were some hints that they were trying to make Max Johnson's life a little easier than Jimbo might have tried to make life for Kellen Mond.
Well, wait,
but that's a luxury playing Arkansas is going to give you.
But you do know, like, you know what Max can do and what he can't do. You know, like, there's no, like, you know what he's comfortable with. You know, like, you inherited Kellen Mond, right? You didn't inherit Max Johnson, did you? Like, you went and got Max Johnson. Right? Like, you, like,
they did. Yes.
But that's what I'm trying to say. Like,
kind of related to going and getting his brother, the tight end, if I remember correctly.
But what I mean is, like, you're a player who you sought out, you know, he's your player, for instance. Yes, he's a backup, but you know what he can do. Like, this game boils down to who up front is going to just have a day and who's not. Like, you got an opportunity here with what Alabama has up front with its defensive line, with what A&M has up front with its defensive line. Like, this is a game. You want to talk about trench warfare? This is the trench warfare game. This is, I don't know if we're looking at a lot of explosive plays here in this bad boy. I don't know if that's what it's going to be. You know, I don't know what the total's sitting at, but like, man, it's going to be a lot of attrition in this game.
The interesting thing is that the weakness for A&M this year, when it's reared its head, and so what I'm pretty much saying is Miami, is the big pass play. It's that downfield pass play. And I referred to it earlier as saying, like, you know, I think A&M is fine unless they have a game where they just undergo a meltdown. Like, that is, fortunately for A&M, I actually think Miami, with Tyler Van Dyke and some of those receivers, is more geared to destroy them over the top than this Alabama team is. Like, has Alabama's thrown, what, one deep ball touchdown this year? The one in the Texas game? Maybe they threw one against Mississippi State this past weekend. I tuned away from that game early for, I think, reasons that I suspect are obvious.
Who gets out of a comfort zone? Who has to get out of a comfort zone in this game? Do either of them or is it just who has the ball last? It's a close game, and can you make the play at the end to actually win the game versus running a route a little bit poorly and the throw not necessarily being on time, which is what happened at the end of the game last year.
Elsewhere in this division, the LSU Tigers are maybe in the worst way right now of any team that came into the year with quasi-legitimate national title hopes. They have two losses as September turns to October. The defense looks... They look downright like... It's not good. And like, I think this looks like one of those Lincoln Riley Oklahoma teams in terms of, like, the defense is probably just too shitty for you to make anything out of this year. Because with that defense, I don't know, like, it's hard to dream up a way where they don't lose again.
Which is,
that's 9-3 and could be 8-4, could be 7-5.
It is kind of crazy to me because I do think they're good up front. Like, they've got really good defensive linemen, but whew.
That's why LSU fans are so pissed off right now, Richard. This is not something that you can look at a roster and say, oh, okay, we're X amount of time away. They entered the year thinking they would be A&M.
Godfrey, I want to ask you about this. I don't know if I would say you praised Matt House a bit, the defensive coordinator there before the year. It seems like he doesn't really know what he's doing, right?
No, I think there's been a huge... We saw a little bit of this on offense last year before I think they understood what they had in Daniels. But we've really, really seen it this year on defense, and I don't have like a quick, you know, soundbite friendly explanation because this is year two. You assembled this defense, and I have still yet to hear from anybody who can accurately explain. I know what they're doing with Perkins. Like, I've had that part explained to me.
But they put him back where he was.
Yeah,
they put him
back where he was. Hold on, Godfrey, because the thing with Perkins is interesting in that. So, as Alex is saying, yes, they have put him back where he was. He is more than most playing on the edge in that same spot. Now, funny enough, when we get to the Alabama game, I think he's going to go back to spy time because you actually want him matched up with, but we'll get to that when we get to that.
But all of that doesn't explain the way they came out specifically with the stakes involved in Florida State, the expectation of winning that game. And things are just incongruent here to the point where I can respond to you, Alex, and say, oh yeah, I was told this guy was supposed to be like one of the secrets to Kelly being successful at LSU was going to be that he had access to hiring the best assistants at a place like LSU because they can afford it, because the talent you get to work with. Hey, wink, wink, look at what just happened in the OC search in Notre Dame. He won't have to deal with that kind of problem anymore, right? That's what I was told in the coaching community. And I would be hard-pressed to find a situation where scheme and coaching and talent don't match up in such a noticeable way as I did with LSU in September on defense.
Yeah.
I don't
Richard,
think it's necessarily a coaching thing on the back end all the way. I just don't think those players on the back end are to the standard that you would expect for LSU. They are not.
All right, so I would
then
agree.
I think we need to go, it but shouldn't then, matter. Okay, hang on, but we need to go back then if that's the case and stop presenting ourselves as a playoff team. And you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about in the back channels and the lines of communication, the way these things happen in our 9.5-10 month offseason. Okay. LSU was not composing itself like that. And so they need to be held to account for that, because I think some of that is Kelly's hubris. And I do think he is still understanding the SEC, or still learning to understand the SEC. And I think it's shown. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with once. I mean, like, the offense is good,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah.
Like, Ole Miss's defense is ass, but like,
that offense is good.
By the way, did you guys talk about this on the hurry up? But like, did anyone else think that Ole Miss should have just fallen down at the one? Because then LSU, and like, is that kid, I can't remember which receiver it is. I think it was a freshman receiver. Like, the last play of the game, it hits him in the hands. Like, LSU should have won that game. They drove straight back down the field. Ole Miss had a chance down two to fall down at the one, run the clock out, kick it, or just do QB sneak. And they ran it in and gave him the ball back with 45 seconds. Just a thought. LSU is extremely close to winning that game. And thus, like, kind of what I said about Georgia earlier, it's like, it just becomes a data point. It doesn't become a narrative. That's the difference in these games in the SEC. So Ole Miss is not on this list, Alex. I think that's
no,
fair.
Let's talk about
I think
about
it's
them.
Fair.
I think that
how would you like to
feeling,
present this before
yeah,
I go?
I have a feeling about Ole Miss that this is going to be an Ole Miss season. Like,
yes, I do too.
They are 4-1. They blew the most winnable Alabama game that they might ever have. They otherwise have been so excellent offensively that having a not very good defense hasn't mattered. They'll win 8 games or 9 games and everyone will go home and have a snack, and Lane will continue to wait and see, you know, when the old man retires and see if he can't get himself back to the place that he used to work. And we will continue to joke about that, and we'll not joke about it. But it just feels like nothing that has happened here in the first 5 weeks for Ole Miss seems to me like it should break the way that we talk about Ole Miss. Like, it looks like Ole Miss. Does it not, Richard?
Yeah, it's. You know what you signed up for.
Like what's different? What is different about this?
Yeah.
And they're fun to watch, and they're one of the better teams in this conference, like usual. But what is different? Like, why should I think that this is any different than any other Ole Miss thing ever?
You shouldn't. You definitely shouldn't.
I do think the defense is marginally better, but is what it is. Like, I'm not
marginally.
They haven't taken a lead.
Marginally. Like, are you sure that it's better? I'm not sure that it's better this year than it was either of the last 2 years when they actually had pretty decent defenses. Lane's first year, that, you know, which was the COVID year, they couldn't defend anything, and that was a weird year. The last 2 years, they've actually had, you know, respectable defenses. I just pulled this. They were top 21 and top. They were 21st and 38 the last few years. They are 47th this year. That's defensive SP plus, but also just like if you watch them play, they like, you know. I don't think that you could watch Ole Miss give up, you know, a decent offensive output to a Tulane team that didn't have Michael Pratt, and to an Alabama team that was coming off of, yeah, like, you know, and 24 was actually decent for Alabama in that game, or watch what LSU did to them the other night and think that this is going to be one of those Ole Miss defenses that does better than you think when you hear the words Ole Miss defense. Like, they're going to go 9-3 and they're going to score 40 points a game and it's going to be fun, but I don't think we have to worry about Ole Miss as a change maker in your SEC this year.
I think your read on it is like everybody knows what they signed up for here. They are probably going to give somebody else a scare. I'm not on their schedule, like I looked up, but like they're going to give somebody a scare because they're going to score a lot of points. And then
you know who that'll be? It'll be the Georgia Bulldogs. They'll give them a scare.
They play Georgia. Okay. Yeah.
Like that's who they'll scare.
I don't know about that.
They'll score a bit. Actually, maybe not. We thought they would. They couldn't block Alabama. How much they can block Georgia? So
they'll be. Hi, resident expert here. They will beat A&M and then get mollywomped by someone that they definitely shouldn't.
Shouldn't, right.
Not Arkansas this weekend. I really I know that's the funniest, like if we're memeing here, but Arkansas is pretty bad. This is the Ole Miss team that you should always expect from here on out if you are an Ole Miss fan or the opposition. And I guess that's a loaded statement in that, like, they really came close to losing this game. They were down several times. They are built to never win the SEC, to never be a serious playoff contender, but to be the worst nightmare possible for a better team having some sort of dysfunction. That's why I reference A&M. I reference, like, look at the, so you just look at the teams that they've beaten in the Lane era. If you are a well-composed, well-coached team without a noticeable deficiency, you can out-talent Ole Miss every time, right? Because they're not, their personnel, like their assembly is just not serious. They're too portal reliant. They don't recruit the lines well enough at the high school level, all this kind of stuff. But they're always going to be fun. They're always going to be explosive. They're always going to be like cheap fireworks, and they will get in the craw of a good team that's suffering an ailment, right?
One thing,
that's what they did last week.
One thing to go back to LSU, because they played last week, so they handhold here. I think it is very noteworthy that Brian Kelly has hit the Pete Jenkins button. Pete Jenkins, yes. For those people who don't know, Pete Jenkins is a journeyman line, a defensive line coach. He sort of is a pioneer of a certain style of defensive line play. There's a very interesting YouTube video about it. If you go and just search like Pete Jenkins, like react attack, the defensive line play and hand play and all that sort of stuff is actually very fascinating. But he is also like Nick Saban's, like every good staff has like one of these guys, like a veteran coach, like a ball coach ass ball coach. Saban had that when Jenkins was on his LSU staff in the early 2000s, and Saban has leaned on him as a consultant over the years at Alabama when Saban has felt that Alabama needs something. He's literally just said, Pete, get here tomorrow kind of type stuff. So Brian Kelly did a version of that. Yes, there's a little bit of playing to the base. The other thing is, I mean, the guy has forgotten more about defense than any of us combined will ever know. So it hints at both a level of seriousness with Brian Kelly, but also like a scotch of, I don't know if desperation's the term, Godfrey, but like grasping, like there's a messaging component to what they're trying to do. Like it leaked for a reason that Brian Kelly has called Pete Jenkins.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's a really good point.
I think he said, I don't know if Brian Kelly said it or it just leaked.
It's credit to him. And I think that 4-win season at Notre Dame taught him a lot about, you know, ultimately if you hire, like if you defer the celebrity quotient a little bit to having really good, notable assistants, then you're going to benefit ultimately from that as the head man. And I think this is a great example of that, that it's happening in season is probably going to shake some people a little bit at LSU, but it really shouldn't. Because we've seen, like, how many staffs have we seen where there's an obviously identifiable problem that just does not get addressed until it's too late. So I give him credit for it. I also, none of this still fixes the questions I have about how you entered into this season. Why do you look this way in weeks one and two and so on? It does not match up to me. And you know what? I fully expect them to finish much stronger like they did last year.
One notable thing about the timing of this Pete Jenkins thing happening, I believe, in the last couple of days, is that LSU's defense has its hands full this week. They are visiting, I believe, the Missouri Tigers in Columbia. And we've kind of been on this for a few weeks now, but Mizzou's passing game is really potent. Brady Cook has been throwing footballs for them for a while now. And until this year looked one way, and this year looks another way. And I think part of that is that a fully revved up Luther Burden is really helpful. Theo Weiss, who came over from Oklahoma, is really, really helpful. And Mizzou just seems to have like a better collection of offensive weapons than like maybe any team in the maybe any team in the SEC. It's up there. It's up there. And Richard,
that we feel weird about giving them flowers.
No, but it's like we were talking as recently as right before the season about like, oh, like someone's going to get fired in this conference. Like Drinkwitz makes sense, right? And who knows? Maybe we will be there at some point. You know, most coaches get fired in this business. But Richard, I kind of feel
he's not getting fired now.
No, of course not. If you just look at like the types of dudes that Mizzou has on that offense, is that enough for you to think, this could be one of those odd years where like a team like Mizzou plays in a New Year's Bowl?
I'm in on this Missouri team. You know, the LSU game is going to be funny because they could lose to LSU because it's what happened last week. Like it's literally like who has the pen last in that game, because those offenses are going to score ad nauseum. I mean, the Kansas State game was that, like, they just, you know, it should have gone overtime.
Richard, one thing that's worth noting, and like when we've talked about Mizzou, we've chosen to talk about how good their receivers are, because I think it's like, it's a bit shocking to like realize that Mizzou might have the best weapons in the league, but also their defense has been good. Like they haven't seen the world's most explosive collection of offenses yet, but Kansas State has a really good offense. It's not an explosive thing as much as it's an efficiency thing.
And it's different. Yeah,
and they kept them in the 20s in that really exciting game that they won a couple weeks ago. They did pretty well against what seems like a good Memphis. So I don't know, Richard, they might have some stuff.
Yeah. Missouri also, the offensive coordinator Kirby Moore is somebody who I was kind of told to like look out for, in a good way. Jesus, in a good way. He came over from, from Fresno, where he coached under, Kalen DeBoer and Jeff Tedford. He played for Chris Peterson. Chris Peterson got a little tree now. Like Chris Peterson's got a tree of guys, who played
Jonathan
for him,
Smith,
Kellen Moore, they got a little tree there.
Jimmy Lake,
and I, so I think Kirby Moore in there has given them a little bit something on offense, and so we'll see. You know, I'm interested in Missouri, especially if Missouri's going to play these very entertaining football games. And I think the LSU game is going to be very entertaining this weekend. It's got a lot more intrigue than I otherwise would have thought.
I think Mizzou in general has a lot more intrigue than we probably would have thought coming into the year. I don't think that they are going to be, and I don't think that anybody thinks that this division belongs to anybody except the Georgia Bulldogs right now. But I do wonder, Richard, if it is possible that Mizzou could supplant Tennessee as the next best team in this division, right before it goes away. Part of why I wonder that is that the first 5 weeks of the Joe Milton administration have been, I don't know, like you couldn't call them a disaster by any stretch of the imagination, but it also has not been the, this guy could be a Heisman candidate thing that you heard in occasional commentary and the more exciting commentary, about Joe Milton coming into the year. And yet, despite the fact that I think the results to date have been less than thrilling, less than amazing, they're 4-1. They're 10th in SP Plus on offense. They did just deal with a Brew McCoy season-ending injury. But tell me, Richard, like, am I sleeping too much on Tennessee because I might have gotten a certain idea about Joe Milton based off the Orange Bowl last year that just hasn't completely borne out yet?
No, I actually think that you're underselling the offensive line injuries and how those have played into what they've looked like to date. I think getting that offensive line back fully healthy, the center and the right tackle, is huge for them. I think about Joe Milton, I can see how you're going to tell me that Milton has improved and he's giving you he's not throwing three picks a game. Like, you know, I see it.
He's been fine in every game except the Florida game.
Yeah. And I think that had a lot to do with not having Mays the center there was a big, big deal for them in that game. you know, I think he, there's an is what it is factor, but I think offensive line getting back and getting congealed and being a complete unit, I think is going to be big for them to be a little bit closer to their finished form. But I do think the wide receiver situation is something to monitor. I'm not sure they're not as good. They weren't as good at wide receiver before Brew McCoy went down. And now Brew McCoy has gone down. So I that is one thing that I do want to continue to monitor for that passing game.
It's going to be an interesting 7 weeks in the Southeastern Conference. I don't know. Like, Richard, I don't think that it's... I do think that people have tended to oversell the extent to which things are open in this league this year, because I'm pretty sure that when it's
absolutely
over, like Alabama or Georgia is just going to win this conference and go to the playoff. And I can't believe, I don't think it's going to be Alabama, but like, I guess I should have been shaming myself a little bit for writing them off to the extent that I did a few weeks ago.
We didn't technically include Kentucky.
Well,
we're going to get to Kentucky.
I think it's indicative of the fact that, like, hopefully if this segment proved anything, it's that you can only keep a handful of these teams in national relevance at any one point in time. And while things have not been convincing in any way, shape, or form, I don't think anyone is necessarily ready to upend or rotate that balance of power, right? No. If anything, it's been...
Dude, Kentucky's offense is not good.
Hold on a second with Kentucky's offense. Okay. Here, like, I'm not ascribing too much to what they did to Florida. What I am saying is Kentucky apps that offense. Here's the thing with Kentucky. It's very, I think, interesting that they get Florida and Georgia back to back, because what they were able to do against Florida is, if Florida's trying to Wisconsin South this, which they are clearly trying to do, if Florida's trying to out Kentucky, they were clearly unable to do that on Saturday. Okay. Now you say, well, Kentucky's trying to build a Georgia-ish blueprint. Now you get to find out. And that's the thing. Like, you get, like, Kentucky is clearly better than Florida and at a higher, like, in the weight class. Now you step up. And now you step up to the team that has, when you try to play Georgia in this physical body to body, it's the same thing with like Michigan. When you try to go like body to body with Michigan and try to man ball them, it doesn't work.
Right.
Unless you are eye to eye talent wise. And I don't think Kentucky is there, but so I do think that game's going to get dragged to hell and Kentucky covers 14.5.
I want to come back to Kentucky.
This is essentially the Lane Kiffin argument, which is that like you can never match a superior opponent. You always have to subvert them. That's why
I want to come back to this
design the way it is.
Kentucky. Right, we'll do Kentucky.
We'll come back to it in more detail in
the tasting menu.
Interesting. I want to say one thing before we get out of here. Every single team that we talked about, if this was next year, this would not be considered a questionable year in the SEC. It would be considered possibly the most exciting ever, because every single team we talked about in the next playoff format would be very much alive right now.
Absolutely. And
like, it'll be fucking awesome.
We're going to do this later. We might as well do it now. Like, you have an SEC that, you know, why I think we're not really ascribing wide open to it, but you have an SEC that everybody is going to say for the next 10 months, Oklahoma and Texas, well, how are Oklahoma and Texas going to compete in this SEC? We've been saying it for 4 years since they decided that they were joining. And now it looks like at least one of them is extremely ready to rumble.
Not the one I thought.
Not the one we thought, but it looks like one of them is ready to rock. Okay. And obviously they play on Saturday. It could be both, but they play on Saturday. I will be at the old Texas State Fair for Red River. I'm fascinated with this game. I think Texas wins because I think Texas is good. Really, really good.
That's why I'm not fascinated. I get that it'll be better than last year for sure, but I'm gonna need to see them data points, Oklahoma, well, Alex, before I'm giving anything kind of proof of concept.
Alex, Red River is the, like, there are a few rivalries that actually live up to the anything can happen thing, right? Like, we joke Bedlam. About Bedlam every year. It Bedlam. Happens. The Iron Bowl is another rivalry where fucking anything can happen. Anything can happen in Red River. We have all seen some weird stuff happen in this game, but I don't see it this year from Texas and Oklahoma. So where are you?
I think Oklahoma is really good. Like, I think that you guys, I think that Godfrey in particular is living too much in what looks like an anomalous 2022. Like, Oklahoma appears to me to be one of the 10 best teams in college football right now.
I don't agree with that. What?
Okay. I don't understand. I don't understand if Oklahoma had, if last year hadn't happened, and it did, you would look at this Oklahoma and think, oh my God, this is one of the best Oklahoma teams we've ever seen. They're scoring
a lot. Oklahoma
better
than Ohio State?
Is not a garbage fire.
Let's do it.
No,
let's
probably
do it. Is
not,
Oklahoma better than Ohio State? No. Is Oklahoma better than Michigan? No. Is Oklahoma better than Penn State? No. Is Oklahoma better than Texas? No. Is Oklahoma better than Georgia? No. Is Oklahoma better than Washington? No. Is Oklahoma better than Oregon? No. Is Oklahoma better than USC?
Maybe.
No.
Maybe.
No.
Is
no.
Oklahoma better than
going.
Texas? No.
Oh, I did Texas. Is Oklahoma better than Florida State?
No.
Could be. Could
is
be.
Is Oklahoma better than Miami?
I don't think
could
so.
Be. Okay.
Is
I
Oklahoma
think
better
guys,
than Notre Dame?
But here's my thing.
Guys,
is Oklahoma better than Clemson?
Here's Jesus.
Yes.
You're going
yes. Steven, what are you doing? Yes.
I can get to 15 on a good argument. I look at Richard right now. Look at the smart one.
Look, with Oklahoma, I got some serious questions with how Oklahoma is built, particularly on offense.
Yes.
I am not scared at all with Oklahoma's skill talent. Like, at all.
Correct.
Oklahoma has one run this season of over 20 yards. One.
The funniest, Richard, the funniest
also their
part
most targeted
of,
receiver is Drake Stoops. That is true.
The fucking hell. Sorry, I had a point. I'll get there. The funniest thing in a not funny situation was that during the Lebby Bryles thing a couple weeks ago, what got swept aside, and rightfully so, because we're talking about real world terrible shit, because we're talking about Art Bryles, is that it came on the heels of that SMU game. Go back and look at their offensive performance in that game. This is when their offensive coordinator decided to make some personal political statement. They're not a great offense. Oklahoma.
Dude, I don't know, Steven. I don't know about that. They just scored 50 last week against Steven. With me or with Steven?
No, I'm with Godfrey on this Oklahoma team, particularly
they
on
just
offense.
Put a 50 burger on Iowa State, which
awesome.
Is not
it's
good
fucking
on offense.
Fucking Iowa State.
Watch that game and look at what pass rush Dylan Gabriel faced.
Bro, Iowa State can't score, but they can play defense. They've been doing it for years.
No, they can't
going
this
back
year,
and,
bud.
Going back and watching that game, that defense is not at the requisite level to test this Oklahoma team because you've got a guy in Dylan Gabriel who I think is good enough.
Sorry, hang on.
Good enough, but I don't think Dylan Gabriel gives you – I don't think you beat a team like Texas, a higher weight class team – Texas with a guy like Dylan Gabriel. Here are the things Texas basically has to do in order to Texas defense in order to beat Oklahoma. Adjust to the tempo, affect Dylan Gabriel, which Iowa State didn't come close to, and tackle in space. Because Oklahoma does not have a run game that is ready to test Tavondre Sweat, Byron Murphy, and the boys. They don't. I do not believe that they will be able to run the ball effectively against Texas. I also don't think they're really going to try. I think they're going to come out and do screen, 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 sideways, sideways, sideways. And if Texas can tackle in space on the perimeter, as well as I think they can, because Jalen Catalan brings his fucking lunch pail every time, Texas is going to limit that Oklahoma offense in a way that I think it gets to a level that I think is unserious. Now, if Oklahoma does come out and tempos them to fucking death, okay if Oklahoma or if Texas can't get lined up.
By the way,
they can't.
I think Texas will win this game, but I'm just saying, like, I think these teams are going to play again. I think Oklahoma is good. I don't think that they're going to make the playoffs.
I mean, that's more a statement of that conference. I mean, I get where you're going there. Just real fast on Iowa State. I get 2 to 3 questions a week on Patreon about Iowa State. And if you are the parent of a toddler, you'll understand this. I really do think Matt Campbell has like built a sandcastle or built a Lego castle or whatever and decided, you know what? I'm just going to tear it all completely down and see if I can do it again for zero reason whatsoever. The idea that Iowa State has any value at the moment is false. You're basing it on previous, like you're basing it on your previous image of Iowa State. I'm not saying they can't do it again. I'm just saying we've seen that program come literally all the way back around. All right. So again, data point, Oklahoma, Iowa State.
Yeah, but, I mean,
no,
50.
I don't give them flowers. Like, 50. Yeah, because they're shitty teams in the Big 12.
2 pick 6s also. That's the other thing.
You're right.
My thing with Oklahoma is there are some smoke and mirrors, bill of goods here involved with this Oklahoma team that I really want to see what happens when the rent comes due against a Texas team that is built properly, which is, look, and we'll get to Texas on offense in a second, but this Texas defense, as it is constituted with what it has up front, is serious business, man. And I don't think Oklahoma's played a defense of that significant skill and speed. Like, I watched the Cincinnati game, I watched the SMU game. Like, I just,
no,
what,
look,
scares
I agree.
You? What scares you about Oklahoma's offense? What scares
I
you?
I do think that it is possible that either Andrell Anthony or Jahlil Farouk has like a goddamn kind of game at some point for this team. It's not good that they can't run the ball very well with Marcus Major. It's not good that Drake Stoops gets the most targets on the team. I don't think that it's like the best Oklahoma offense you've ever seen in the world. Speaking of guys who shouldn't be in college football, shout out Jeff Lebby. But they score a ton of points, man. At some point, it counts for something. At some point, it counts for something. And I think that of all of the questions you could ask about Lebby, can this guy figure out ways to score points is not historically one of those questions.
They score a ton of points against Arkansas State, Tulsa, and an Iowa State team, again, aided by pick sixes. And they scored 10 points.
They scored a decent bit of points even when they were terrible last year. And then because
did you watch that Cincinnati game?
I did. But let me turn around the question about the Cincinnati game to you.
No, it was
a slog. But did you notice that Oklahoma has an actual fucking defense now for the first time in like my entire life?
So Riverside. Alex. So thank you for Riversiding it because I wanted to Riverside it anyway. I do think this is where this game gets hairy. I think Texas is going to win. I think Texas has a pretty legitimate, like I ran and took Texas -6.5. Like I think Texas can win this game by 2 scores, but I am concerned about
interesting.
This thing with Texas. Texas in the red zone has not been everything you want. I think some of that may have to do with Alabama. Fair. I think some of that may have to do with the fact that they have been kind of poking around and trying to figure out what works best for them in the run game. I also think this Texas team on offense is different in how Sark is managing games this year, right? There is not a fireworks factor in the beginning of these games, in the first quarter of these games. Texas has been finishing games at a level that is quite remarkable, in my opinion, for a Texas team that we have seen lose the plot, be soft, not be able to finish over the last decade.
Lose the fourth quarter. It's a cliche, but they would lose the fourth quarter.
They're not doing that this year. They are getting, right. they are, okay, maybe you hang around in the first half or whatever. We make, and I know halftime adjustments are a little bit overstated, but we make our halftime adjustments for argumentative sake. We come out in the second half. We found what works, and we're going to beat your ass over the head with it. And I think Sark's point, which is one of the most important points I think he's ever made, he made it twice Alabama week, on Monday of Alabama week and after the game when I was standing there listening to him say this. We were able to run the ball when 100,000 people knew we wanted to run the ball against Alabama.
And how do you do that? It's by the okay, so let me back up. The reason I bought in actually wasn't them beating Alabama. I expected that. I bought in, and I'm not joking when I do like hashtag Bo Davis was right. It was real. It was a cliched narrative that they were soft, that they were the five stars who read their press clippings. But all of that had legitimacy. I'll go ahead and say this because, I mean, I don't think he'll care if I, like, I talked to Brennan Marion, who's the OC at UNLV now, who was on that staff last year, and he was talking about how that team's culture changed as they again started to see proof of concept on in line play as to what they could do, the way they practice. I don't think people realize, one, how much Sark has changed since he was head coach at USC, and two, how much the culture at Texas has changed by Sark. He's done a really good job cherry picking certain operational aspects of Alabama. They are mean. I say this in the most complimentary way possible. They went out and they got mean, physical players. And Texas never had that. They never had that. So to Richard's point about knowing we're going to line up and run it and running it and succeeding, that's fundamental shit that's been missing from this program for as long as I've been watching college football, because they were the world's best finesse team when they won the national title.
I'm fascinated in how this game goes, because then you drop in the fact that, yeah, man, it's a Red River and weird shit has happened in this Red River. But I really think Texas is.
So you think there's something to this game? Because I think they come out and I think it might be humbling.
I'm not sure Oklahoma's defense is bad enough to where Texas beats this team by like 30 points. Like, I think this is a close game at halftime and Texas boat races and wins by like 12. Like, I don't necessarily think Texas absolutely blows the doors off of Oklahoma, because Alex's point about Oklahoma's defense is well taken. Like, I don't Oklahoma on defense, it will at least stand up here. And I also don't, like I said, I don't think Texas is kind of built to have that fireworks explosion script and then fade. I think Texas spends the first half figuring out what works and what doesn't. But I also do think the run game here gives them they found it with the run game. I'll tell you that right now. I mean, watch that Kansas game. As that Kansas game went on and they leaned on Kansas and then Jonathan Brooks got going. They had a bunch of explosive plays in that Kansas game, but they didn't have it wasn't like 70 yard scores. It was like 25 yard passes and 12 yard runs, which are explosive plays and kill you. But they weren't like, it wasn't like 75 yard touchdowns after 75 yard touchdown, even though I know Brooks had the long run and what have you.
Let's consider that a prelude to the tasting menu. But before we get into the rest of it, I want to talk about home field apparel. Godfrey, what are you wearing right now there? What's that home field
UTEP,
shirt you got on?
Baby.
I see UTEP. That. There it is. Shout out to our YouTube audience who can see my North
What's
Dakota
up?
State
What's
shirt,
up, El
Godfrey's
Paso?
UTEP shirt.
El Paso, home maybe field is the best city in Texas.
Home field is the best in the business. I am excited to be with them in Athens, Georgia on the Friday of Georgia's homecoming weekend. I believe that's November 3rd or 4th. The details are currently pinned on my Twitter at Alex_Kirshner. That'll be fun to get to be with Josh and the entire home field crew that is in Athens that weekend. But whether you're going to Athens to hang out with us or not, you can go to homefieldapparel.com and use the promo code SZD20. That's SZD20 for 20% off your first order. Why pay full price if you don't have to? That's nonsense. You shouldn't do that. And if you do that, if you go to homefieldapparel.com and use that promo code, you will be looking good, feeling good, playing good as you wear some of the most comfortable shirts that you'll ever find that also happen to look really, really good. So thank you so much to our longest standing partners and our great friends at Home Field Apparel. SCD20 is that code. Richard, what's up?
TASTEIT. TASTEIT. Godfrey didn't hear this last week because he wasn't here. I didn't want to do it, but TASTEIT.
Marginally better.
Marginally.
Marginally.
Don't worry. I'll have some for you next week.
Marginally better.
Don't worry. So this is week 6. Conference USA weeknight games like Tuesdays, Wednesdays are getting underway. Mm-hmm. As of this Wednesday, we record this early in the morning on Wednesday, October 4th. So by the time you listen to this, those might already be being played. But on Thursday night, Western Kentucky at Louisiana Tech. Tech has won 3, which is what it won each of the last couple of years. I'm not sure if they are any good. those wins have come against the likes of FIU, UTEP, sorry, Godfrey, and I think an FCS game as well. I don't know if Sonny Cumbie is turning things around there or not, but I do know that this game against Western Kentucky will be an opportunity to demonstrate if La Tech is kind of moving back up in the CUSA pecking order.
Yes, I would give it that, but not much more.
Western looks good against bad defenses on offense. So they're probably going to look good against this team.
Yeah.
On Friday night, Kansas State at Oklahoma State. I think that there is a possibility that things get ugly for Oklahoma State.
One-sided anxiety bowl is not an anxiety bowl. I had someone ask me about this game because K-State's fine, but like
Offense for Kansas State, and I think this is impressive, and it speaks to the work that Chris Klieman has done there. That offense loses like a generational college football player for them in Deuce Vaughn, who's like one of those running backs at a level where running backs really matter, who made a huge difference for your offense for years. You lose him and you just backfill with DJ Giddens, who is one of the best running backs in the country. I think you can do that because you block, and the game is about blocking and tackling, and it doesn't hurt when you bring back a quarterback and Will Howard, who showed some things last year. And, you know, you have a offensive line with guys like Cooper Beebe, who you're going to see on a bunch of All-American lists. And like, this is a good continuity program at this point that I just think has.
Alex, lean back a little bit.
I'm leaning.
That's what it is. That's what it is.
YouTube audience.
I'm telling you. For the YouTube audience, Alex is wearing a North Dakota State shirt, and feels like they're plugging and playing with skill position players that should be more outliers for a program at the level of Kansas State. It's a very NDSU thing to do, which is mainly because they're so consistent in coaching line play that you can lose someone like Vaughn and not take a momentous step back. It is, if you follow the FCS, North Dakota State, like other opposing fans for years would be like, when they get rid of insert running back or quarterback here, maybe they'll take a step back, and then it would just never happen.
And it hasn't happened at Kansas State. I think that while I'm on the record that I think Oklahoma is the second best team in this conference this year, if it's not them, I think there are only three teams that I look at and think, oh, like you could win the Big 12 this year, and Kansas State. Yeah. Is one of those teams, and obviously just did it last year. Also, Friday night, Nebraska at Illinois.
No.
Could be ugly. Could be ugly.
No.
Could be ugly.
Could?
I'm so good on that. Saturday early, Boston College and Army. Army off a bye week.
Catch that screen pass. You're killing me. Catch the screen on first down. They throw the screen on first down. They set up. They're trying to do these trips and bubbles, and they just catch the screen pass, and you'll be really good.
This is a question about Army. Like, Boston College is, you know, turbo bad, as we've discussed, and this is the kind of game that normally we would look at and be like, oh, well, not the team you want to schedule. It's still probably not, and I think that Army is favored in this game, or should be for a reason.
If you're
Army and you no longer are the flexbone team, does that make you less pesky, scary for a bad Power Five?
No, because that they have they've gotten away from the flexbone, but like they are still triple option, like. Kansas scored 14 points against Texas on Saturday, right? Kansas came out and you were like, oh, what's up here? What's up here is Kansas was running the triple option effectively from the shotgun with the backup quarterback, and Texas didn't plan on it because Jalen Daniels got hurt. Well, we realized he was injured 20 minutes before the game. So there are still legitimate bones and elements of the triple option that you can use, that Army is able to use. Also, remember, Army is also very aggressive maximizing their drives because they go for it on fourth down a lot, and they're pretty good on fourth down.
Almost always in plus, almost always at midfield. I would mean all the way up until their own 35, they're going for it on fourth down. The other thing I would point out, and watching the UTSA win specifically, and they try to do this against Cuse, they just got off schedule. They basically go back to the triple when they have a lead. One of the things that really impressed me about this offense, and again, to go back to the story that you wrote with Connor, Richard, this wasn't in the story, but they weren't going to tell you this in the spring, was that they are they're introducing a new offense to create gaps and distance and to be more explosive, to run a 2-minute drill, to do things that you would need to do that the triple can't. But when they get 7 points up, 8, 9 points, I'm somewhere in that range, they go right back to leaning on you and leaning on you and leaning on you. And that honestly is, it's kind of awesome. You just flip the old switch and go back to it where you can just be annoying and terrible. And then basically that's when we're, you know, everybody's tweeting those possession timelines. Like they're like, oh shit, 13 minutes or, you know, whatever, 7-minute drive. Like that's what that is. They're using the new offense to punch you in the mouth, and then they're just going to bleed you out and hold onto the ball as much as they can.
Also in the Saturday early window, LSU at Mizzou. We just talked about these teams, but think Mizzou's wideouts could have a real feast in this game. William and Mary at UVA. UVA is winless and could remain. Richard, I believe you had William and Mary in the FCS upset draft here, and that is worth worth keeping an eye on. Also, it's a homecoming for
real quick.
William and Mary's head coach.
This is Minority Coach of the Week in an interesting schematic spot. Remember, as usual, Minority Coach of the Week is not a portender or a predictor of success. It's typically and simply taking a minority coach in a certain spot and saying, that's interesting. This is more kind of the administrative spot. Mike London is coming home. Mike London, former Virginia head coach, is bringing his tribe back to Charlottesville to play a game. William and Mary's offense is, and Mike London knows what to call it, but William and Mary's offense is sick. It's disgusting. It's sicko in the best way possible. So if you get a chance to watch this game, look at some of the stuff that they do. They are going to frustrate Virginia. They're going to bamboozle Virginia. Don't know if they're going to win. They're an FCS team, but they are a good FCS team. I mean, they're top, I think they're top 10, if not top 5 ranked FCS team is William and Mary.
Yeah, they're good.
They are definitely a playoff team. The if you haven't been paying attention to FCS, I won't do this right now because we're running on time, but like FCS looks a little different this year. It's been very interesting.
Marshall at NC State. Marshall already has an ACC win this year against Virginia Tech.
Watch this game.
And it seems like they could maybe get another one here.
Watch this game. I'm not going to be too foreboding about it. One, Marshall is pretty good. And two, Charles Huff is getting play in a lot of circles. They win this one too. It's a lot of people going to be introduced to Charles Huff come Monday, Tuesday in college football media if they have two ACC wins without, and they maybe not, they're probably not the best team in their division in the Sun Belt, and they could have two ACC wins.
New quarterback for NC State. Pay attention to that.
Maryland at Ohio State. I don't know that I'll ever see Maryland. I don't know that I'll ever see Maryland beat Ohio State. I mean that like it might literally never happen, or it might not happen before the Super Leagues come and Maryland gets left behind, which probably will happen.
We're not doing this. We're not doing this, Richard. Remember what we said in the meeting.
But I think that it could happen.
Wait.
Maybe.
Nope. Wait. I'm going to cut you off. With all the fans who count how many times I cut my co-hosts off, Richard and I have decided. Don't do any of that. Well, eventually the world's going to end and Maryland's going to be scorched earth and nuclear war and a Super League. Nope. Right now, I want from you, Richard, let's go, what, 3? Let's go 4. 4 reasons why Maryland can win this game.
Dude, let it
Because
rip,
they're undefeated.
All right.
Come on.
All right.
Let's
fine.
Go.
They are undefeated.
I want
5-0.
Nothing but positivity about the University of Maryland's football team.
Sure.
Go.
I think Talia is the best quarterback in the game, which is kind of funny. Am I wrong, Richard?
Clip that.
Am I wrong?
No, we just said clip it. You're doing fine.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, Maryland has a good millionth year quarterback in Talia Tungavailoa. I think that is interesting.
That's a backhanded compliment. Harrison, he's just a good quarterback.
Marvin Harrison Jr. may not be healthy. We don't know. And Maryland has good cornerbacks.
Are we counting that as a positive?
Yeah.
For Maryland?
I mean, it's a reason. The problem, that's 2. I will say that in the way of analyzing this game, I am worried that we're not going to be able to run the ball. Roman Hemby's a good player,
that is not a positive.
Ohio State's defensive front is still, you know, outclassing a line like Maryland's, and we'll just have to see what happens. I'm going to be with a bunch of Maryland people on Saturday.
Are you going where is my, Columbus or is in
college? This is in
Columbus. Oh, you live in LA now.
It's in Columbus.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. But I'm going to be actually in Baltimore preparing one of my best mates to walk down the aisle on Saturday night, which is why the hurry-up's on Monday. Go to fall weddings. And they're excited. Maryland fans are excited. Maryland fans, you know, these guys are already talking you know, this is our moment. And I'm the guy in the group chat being like, I don't know, boys. Like, I don't know about that, but we'll see.
Well, you can't get to four. I think we got like two and a half positive statements about Maryland football undefeated in October.
41-17 written all over it, man.
Yeah.
So, Maryland almost had a
shot, season. Alex.
Red River is also folks, in this early slate. We just talked about
He can't do it. He can't do it, folks. That was the point of that bit. Everyone thinks I'm negative about my alma mater. Nobody is more negative about their alma mater than Alex Kirshner.
Yes, Red River is also in this. I'll be there. I'll be out in the fair at the College Game Day scene Saturday morning. If you happen to be there, I've been told you have to get there very, very early because of fair traffic, etc.
Yes, you do.
It is baby's first Red River. Yeah. So I'm pumped.
Oh, you've never been?
Yeah, I've never been.
You gonna eat something fried?
You gotta do one thing.
Yes.
No, you gotta do one thing. So, like, honestly, believe it or not, it's counterintuitive, Richard, for the belly and for the fact you gotta work that day. Go with something sweet that's fried. Don't go with anything that's like meaty and greasy, or else you might discover that the facilities at the Cotton Bowl have not been updated in like
know,
40 years.
Mid afternoon on Saturday, Wazoo at UCLA, hidden on the Pac-12 networks.
What is a good game that no one's going
to
watch.
I'll tell you, there's a couple of these. We're about to learn. There is going to be.
We'll get to it.
I think it's going to be a good game. I think that whoever wins this game sort of gets to claim the last like peripheral. Oh, yeah, could win this conference. Like you're still in it type of spot. I don't think that either of these teams are quite there. But I do think that whoever wins this game can claim continued relevance into mid-October in the Pac-12 race, and there's a lot of value in that. Bama at A&M, we talked about these teams at some length, so we're not going to spend a lot of time there. Evan Stewart did a lot to Alabama last year, and I wonder what he might do to Alabama this year. Syracuse at North Carolina. I'm afraid that Syracuse may be in for a bad time. Yeah. As they were against Clemson.
Are you watching kind of that game with for NFL draft reasons?
go Falcons. Texas State at Louisiana. Me. Could be looking at the best year one job in the country right now by G.J. Kinney and San Marcos. I think they're going to lose here, probably, against a team that's a little farther along. But if I'm wrong,
you would start
to ask insane questions like,
yeah. Yeah.
Could Texas State be one of the best teams in the Sun Belt?
Yes.
And like James Madison's ineligible. Like, could weird things happen here? If they win this game, you'd start to have those conversations.
Look at the west side. Look at the west side of the Sun Belt, and like it becomes
the other
a lot
division.
Less
but yeah, yeah,
crazy.
Virginia Tech at Florida State. Tech's defense actually is less sad than the offense. And I'm just gonna bring this up off a bye week. You're not gonna entertain a little bit of sloppiness for FSU.
Nope.
Team that almost lost to Boston College. Okay,
I don't know. That is a brain farting operation. Hence the BC game. But I mean, Virginia Tech is
they're bad. Although they
if we are inching towards positivity in Blacksburg, we are at a snail's pace. I'm not saying I don't believe in what Pry's doing. I'm just saying that like in the portal era, they are. I don't know. That's a conversation for another day. They're not. We might have a BC type experience for Florida State, but ultimately they will probably be fine to the tune of double digits.
Virginia Tech last weekend when they beat up on Pitt had, you know, a great Lane Stadium crowd and Sandman was there, and you know it was like it was a really exciting night. And I tweeted something like, "Wow, like Virginia Tech fans kind of underrated for how like Nebraska fans they are always there." Even when there is like almost no hope for the program. And shout out to the Virginia Tech fan who corrected me and said, not almost no hope for the program. There is no hope for the program. and we are still here.
Tech fans right now remind me of when South Carolina was undefeated, winless in back-to-back years a long time ago. I think you guys were like in, I don't even want to know. But it was a long, long time ago, and South Carolina was simultaneously selling out their stadium at Williams-Brice while also never winning a football game. So
South Carolina,
it's not that
South Carolina is a place it's not that bleak. Ranks up when even when they're bad.
Yeah, it is not that bleak at all in Blacksburg, but I am saying like things have been tough lately and you have not felt that from the program. From the fans. Yep.
Arkansas State at Troy. A chance for Arkansas State to announce that they might actually be okay. Godfrey, you've been following this. They were awful.
It's the quarterback.
But they have turned it into a new quarterback. Jalen Rayner. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
so like, they knew in camp. Yeah. Apparently they knew in camp that this kid was going to be the future. They just didn't know if they wanted to start him right away. And guess what? If you go back and look at their early season production, they needed to probably start him right away. It's just what that meant was actually throwing him out against Oklahoma, one of the best teams in college football, Alex Kirshner. It meant throwing them against Oklahoma, throwing him against Memphis. They wanted to wait. They're not a brand new team. They're just not the team that was losing that badly. They beat like UMass and an FCS program, I think. They need this badly. I don't know.
Right. They're into the part of the year.
Possible with Troy.
They're into the part of the year where they need to win a few games like this. The other game that they won, Godfrey, was against Southern Miss, which might have its own issues.
Southern Miss has some serious issues we can discuss on the Patreon, but this is the kind of game that John Summerall loves. This is the kind of game that like that Troy defense loves, where it's like, oh, you've got a really athletic, promising talent at quarterback. Like, it's like all those videos on TikTok of where like parent, like you're swatting the ball down. It's just, I don't think it's this week for Arkansas State.
Probably not. You would think that Troy would handle business, but it's a chance for Arkansas State if you believe in the new quarterback. Bowling Green at Miami of Ohio. So Bowling Green beat up on Georgia Tech last week. Now, if you actually go back and look at that game, that was a lot of Tech shooting itself in the foot. And I think that was mostly about like, holy shit, Georgia Tech, you guys really have to get it together, more than it was Bowling Green emerging. But a way for Bowling Green to suggest otherwise would be to win this game against what I think could be like a MAC championship type of team at Miami, Ohio. No comments.
Yeah,
I don't even want to
acknowledge the existence of that Georgia Tech game on every side of the ball.
Fine. Purdue and Iowa. Cade McNamara out for the year. Absolutely. ACL for Iowa. Mm-hmm. Could get really, really painful for Iowa.
Did y'all watch the Purdue Illinois game?
Oh, the Ryan Walsh.
It was a really nice performance for Purdue. And Illinois might suck.
Things click like I've said proof of concept probably 13 times already today, but like first year team, like schematically, I think you saw them understanding it and getting it for the first. It just happened to be against this whole team.
Yeah.
They could do some things here.
I don't want to take away from that performance because it was really good, but they also brought over like 8 Illinois assistants. Like, you want to talk about an opponent who know.
They knew the book.
They knew the book.
Right. Richard,
one of the interesting things here, is that the Iowa thing with Brian Ferentz's points, you're telling me that it's broken contain and it's not just something that the internet loves to talk about.
No, yeah. This is not just like a bit. Like, they put this up on a graphic on NBC's pregame show.
Yeah.
For the game. Like, this is now the thing around this Iowa program for the rest of the season.
Because it was a really shitty idea by Gary Barta to do it this way.
It's in all the mainstream. I mean, it's in like the Des Moines Register. It's in all the Iowa media.
Yeah.
Has been.
It's like it's the undercurrent of every Iowa game.
This was never really an internet thing. I mean, I'm going to be honest with y'all. We can't really own this one.
I think you're right.
Like, mainstream picked up on this as soon as it became public.
I do fear, though, that we are coming to a dud of an ending once we get to the ending that I think we're going to see, which is that they missed the mark. But like, I just think Brian's going to end up on the NFL staff. Like, Brian's just going
to rehome. If it were that easy to rehome him, wouldn't they have done it last year?
Dude, I don't even think they're going to fire him.
Right. The other thing is, here's the thing. If he doesn't go to another team or to the NFL or what have you, I also agree with Godfrey that I don't think they have the chutzpah to do it. They're already signaling, by the way, that they're not going to.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's Iowa fans are going to have to deal with this as long as they're going to have to deal with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a new AD, and she's already given some comments of like, oh, well, that was a previous AD that did that. And da, 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 da. So, like, I think they're signaling they're not going to do it.
I don't know if he's ever been more powerful than he is right now.
I was going to talk about
daddy.
You may not like this, frankly, if you're an Iowa fan or an observer or what have you, but
Alex doesn't.
For Kirk to just be like, no,
no,
that's kind of cool.
Putting
aside any of the context behind the situation, for Kirk to just be like, I'm not fucking doing it.
I'm a little, it's a tough spot for the new AD there because he's Kirk Ferentz and he's sort of a made man there. So it's a really tough spot for Beth Getz, I believe, is the new athletic director. But man, Barta really fucked this one up. Like, what a steaming bag of shit to leave your predecessor to have to navigate this. It's just not. And let's move on. We don't want to spend too much time on this. USF at UAB. Yeah. UAB, I think, is like really bad. Like worse than they've been since the Alabama Board of Trustees did what they did to them. And
I know none of us likes Dilfer, but Alex, did you watch
that? I have nothing personal against him.
He did.
I'm not.
You're
frozen.
Looking at me. You're looking at me like I have something personal. What? I don't know this guy.
By the way, he did apologize for the what's its face over the weekend.
The yelling?
Yes, yes.
You're going to have to clarify.
I don't have a personal thing with this guy. The reason that I've been on it, I'll tell you why I've been on it, Godfrey, is that Dilfer, as you both talked about at length, was hired to be White Dion for UAB, which I think includes some level of, all right, we're going to use this guy's relative celebrity, not the same as Dion, but relative, to portal some guys to put a quick floor into the program to bring new excitement. And they're awful. This is the worst UAB team in like 5 years.
Dilfer was hired because they literally ran down the sheet and scared off or fucked up every other candidate that they could have hired at an otherwise really good G5 job, because it was maybe one of the worst run searches that I've seen in the 20 years I've been doing this. That's the answer. Now, when they trotted Dilfer out, I mean, look, I was here in Nashville and talked to people in the high school community, because he was a high school coach here in Nashville. This all came about incredibly late. This was grasping at straws at the very end. And then they trotted him out and they're like, oh yeah, look at Dion. It's the same thing. They just invented that shit on the spot. All right. If you're a Simpsons fan, it was steamed hams. Just like, that's how fast they thought of it. So they are bad, Alex. They don't seem to have quit on him, which is what I actually heard early on, whether he was just like
pretty well against
the roster insane. Like summer was really brutal or something. Like, they seem to still have some buy-in. They're just not good.
UCF at Kansas. Don't know about Jalen Daniels' medicals. Also don't know entirely what UCF's QB plan is. So they have this guy, Timmy McClain, who's a lot of fun. Lefty, a true runs around and does some stuff quarterback who made the play of the year on that fourth down against Baylor. But John Reese Plumlee had been hurt. And I don't know. It's one of those situations, Richard, where you can't really tell, is the previous quarterback hurt or have you replaced him? I don't really know. So I don't know what they're doing. But this guy's fun to watch. Enjoyable player. Vanderbilt at Florida. Richard, if Florida loses this game, will you stop scolding people for wanting to fire Billy Napier if they lose this game?
No,
they're not losing this game.
Look, I get it, and I want to be clear. I get it. I know why. And if you lose to Vanderbilt for a second year in a row, that's pretty tough.
Okay. Here's the exciting
thing
that I'm going to be watching.
I also don't think they're going to lose again.
So Colorado at Arizona State is on the Pac-12 networks. There are going to be a lot of people relatively new to college football who are going to learn about the Pac-12 network's distribution problems.
Welcome to
this
hell,
weekend.
Folks. Welcome to hell.
Hey, is Periscope still a thing?
Somebody's going to IG Live or Twitch stream this bad boy.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, if you're new here, because every comic book is someone's first, there's a famous in our world event, which was that Army took Oklahoma to overtime in Norman a couple years ago, and it was on pay-per-view because the Big 12's television contract was super screwed up. That's the shortest way to tell that story. It was like $60 to watch what everyone thought would be a rout, and so no one did it. And then as the evening's going along, it was kind of a tepid evening. Everyone keeps seeing the score like, oh shit, Army's tied. Oh wow, they're going tit for tat with Oklahoma. So no one in the world, in the college football Twitter world, is like, well, this game's on pay-per-view. No one has it. One dude used Periscope, which was an app that was that through Facebook?
I think it was Twitter.
Okay. So it was a live video streaming app or feature that no longer exists. And he essentially held his phone as such up to his TV, which had he paid for the game on pay-per-view for $60. And like tens of thousands of us watched live the Oklahoma Army game. And periodically, this dude would pan down to his bare feet. We don't know why. We still don't know why to this day. I don't know who this hero was. But we saw the ending of that game that way. Oklahoma won in overtime. Someone is going to have to be that hero this weekend because the Deion thing persists with, I think now we're pretty confident that it's maybe NFL only football viewers or just sort of tourists in the Swifty sense of like, oh my God, like a Jets game. So those people that Deion has brought into the college football viewing world are, Alex, you're probably right. They're probably going to fire up that cable box on what time is this game actually?
Mid-afternoon. Eastern.
Right. They're going to come home. They'll be like, I'm going to watch Deion. Like, because Deion has his tribe now of viewers in the college football space. They're going to exhaust their cable options, get pissed. Some poor, like, think of the cable operators on standby on Saturday that are going to have to deal with some, like, just awful, awful phone calls from people who are just exasperated that they can't see Deion.
On the game itself, I do think that in order to avoid a lot of air coming out of the on-field balloon for Colorado, you have to win this game. Like this,
ASU's pretty bad.
Yeah, this would not be so a cool loss.
They're so
ASU injured. Is so. I'll throw this in because this was another patron question about like, can year zero ever exist again? I don't know if it's ever going to exist after this year, but I think Arizona State might have manufactured the last year zero in college football history.
Saturday evening, Kentucky at Georgia. Kentucky does this every year. They're competitive in this game. They lose this game. Can someone give me a reason why that would be different this year? Either way, like that they would get blown out or that they could actually win it.
I mean,
Carson Beck turnovers and consistent running.
Triple cover Brock Bowers.
Honestly, like,
is it somebody else?
If Beck is flustered enough and maybe there's one or two small injuries where he has to key in on one target and then Kentucky still grind, like we're still talking 16, 14, 19, 16, something like that. Like
this is like eight possession game, man. Just like eight possessions aside.
Absolutely.
Game.
Arkansas at Ole Miss. Richard, I think you were ahead of the curve before the season on the Sam Pittman stuff. That fan base seems to love him and also be very tired of him and could get more tired of him after this weekend.
Yeah. Watch that space. I mean, it's not awesome.
My offer stands, Sam. My offer stands. I'll help you do it. You could be a legend, my friend. You could be a legend. Mm. You announce it now. You go out in a blaze of glory. You become an ambassador. You got paid. You keep your hog statue. You live on the lake. Crack open a few Bud Lights every evening. Dude, trust me.
Michigan and Minnesota, do not watch this game. Understand what Michigan is, though. You are asking people, why would you watch this game if you are not a Michigan or Minnesota person? I'm not even trying to
agree.
I'm not trying to nag Michigan here. I'm going to get to the compliment. Michigan
that was just funny.
Is doing the thing you ask them to do against the opponents that they have played. They have gained almost all of their available yards against their opponents. You do not score. Yeah. As we said on Sunday on the hurry up, it's the same game five times in a row. It's going to happen for a sixth time.
Minnesota, I don't know if that running back is going to be back, which basically is their offense. So this thing's going to be like a route.
In the interest of providing some intermediate Michigan analysis, because we all agree that there's nothing to really talk about until November with this team. The run defense is insane. Like you won't get yards, especially with the running back situation for Minnesota. Chris Jenkins is what people in the industry call good. The defensive tackle for Michigan. Like you just don't move the ball by running it against this team. They have on their, my favorite stat about this Michigan team is that on their red zone defensive drives, of which there's been like single digits, it's not a lot. 12.5% have resulted in a touchdown. So you get inside their 20 and you have about a 1 in 10 chance of scoring a touchdown. And you're not going to get inside the 20. Notre Dame at Louisville. Louisville's off to a great start. They're undefeated under Jeff Brohm. Mm-hmm. I think the fun will pause this week. I don't think that they just haven't played anything like this. And I think they're going to, you know, be awoken in that way.
Yep. And they'll be fine with it. I mean, honestly, I do feel bad. This is one team we haven't kind of reached out and just pointed out and said, hey, maybe keep an eye on the way that they're developing this. But everything Louisville thought they were getting in Brohm, they got it. this is going to be, man, I can only really talk about Louisville in a long-term manner right now. But I think if you are a Louisville fan, go enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the fact that you're in like a high-profile game and don't worry about the immediate future. Because I think long-term, they're really well set up. Man, recruiting in the city of Louisville in the state of Kentucky, if Stoops sticks around for 5 more years, is going to be, it's going to be really fierce.
Fresno at Wyoming. Remember, no divisions in the Mountain West, meaning very real possibility that this game turns out to determine one of the conference title game.
This is going to be a really, really good football game. This is going to be, I think, close. I think it's going to be, I mean, I'm going to use everyone's words against them. This is going to be a Power 5 football game in terms of like trench play and running the ball. Fresno should not be this good this fast after the personnel rotation and losing Hayner. I think they're probably one of the best run programs, certainly in the G5, if not in the country. You know, the second, third act of Tedford there is like, it's just, I've already stumped for Wyoming several times on this show as being like maybe the G5 team to watch. I know that they have a loss against Texas, and we've talked about Air Force as well. Air Force is probably another team we short shrifted, Alex, but Fresno is so far ahead. Fresno is so far ahead, honestly, of where we expected them to be in. I think the last thing we said in the Mountain West preview was like, it's okay to have a rebuilding season. No one's evaluating you this year. You've lost X, Y, and Z, because it wasn't just Hayner. I believe it was most of the offensive battery. This is going to be a really good football game. And again, this isn't a non-conference game, so I can't do my joke about why'd you go to Laramie, but like it will be in Laramie. And now that they have momentum there, it's a really tough place to play. App should not have gone to Laramie, but...
Yeah, well, they win that game if they don't get a field goal going the other way. Georgia Tech at Miami. Georgia Tech, very bad. Richard, you alluded to this earlier. Miami, maybe very good?
Maybe very good.
Yeah.
Can they get Cam Kitchens
back? Is that our new t-shirt?
Get Cam Kitchens back?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
If I were Miami here, I would give the ball to Henry Parrish Jr. 25 times and hit them with him like he is a battering ram.
If we could get Connor on the phone, could we just do a new t-shirt where it's Sebastian the Ibis and he's hitting a vape and the smoke spells out maybe very good, question mark?
Well, that's not the drug of choice for Sebastian. Come on now.
Texas Tech.
Alec, how many, have you ever been around it's a group Miami, of Miami baby. Fans and not seen over half of them vaping?
I know what he means. I know what both of you mean. Texas Tech at Baylor. Baylor, you want to talk about a team that needed a win in the worst way. Woo! Did Holy Baylor shit. Need that one wow. on Saturday?
And, I don't know if it changed anything.
But boy, did they need that one. You want to talk about a team that needs a win in the worst way here? Like, that was Baylor on
Everybody.
Saturday.
Ladies and gentlemen. Needs a win in this game.
But is an anxiety bowl. I make these calls. It is a jury of one. But is an anxiety bowl. Go for it.
First TT.
Enjoy the butt.
Baylor, it's funny, like I don't want to do what I'm going to do, which is to sort of disregard that incredible comeback, but I think it's likelier that that was just like the thrashing on the deathbed, not like a turning point where suddenly everything's going to be great. Like I think UCF just completely fell apart in that game, and it was an impressive showing for Baylor in the second half there, but I'm afraid that Baylor is still really bad and have some concerns. Arizona at USC. Arizona is going to be motivated because USC went and took a bunch of their good players after last year. However, the problem is that those good players now play for USC.
Okay. All right.
I don't know if Jayden Delore is going to play in this game. They really need him. Look, we know what USC's defense is, but like they're going to be fine in this game. But there is a game. I mean that to say, if Jayden Delore plays, there's going to be a game on the schedule, not Washington, not Oregon, and not Notre Dame, that USC's defense gets pushed to the brink, and it's not enough. Hell, it almost happened last week.
Is this what we're calling this week, though?
No, because I don't think I don't know if Jayden Delore is going to play.
Arizona is not terrible.
No.
You're welcome.
Jed Fish has done a better job there than we thought he would do when he took that job. We'll see what it's worth.
Jed Fish, search Twitter.